Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
In Ukraine, Russian troops are continuing their advance in the eastern Donbas region, and the focus is now on Severodonetsk, the last key city remaining under Ukrainian control in the Luhansk area. Porrig O'Brien is a reporter with Channel 4 News, and he joins me on the line now from Pokrovsk. Porrig, thank you very much for joining us this morning. First, we'll take a broader look at the situation in the wider Donbas region.
And just before we sort of start going into place names that perhaps many of us haven't heard much about until recently, including myself, just to give you some broader context in terms of what's happening in Donbass. Remember, Donbass is made of two regions, Donetsk and Luhansk. About over 90% of Luhansk is now in Russian hands, and about half of Donetsk. In terms of the human cost of this particular conflict on this particular front line, you mentioned that town, Severodonetsk. Latest estimates put the number of civilian deaths just in that battle at about 1,500 people. Conservative estimates in terms of the amount of troops on both the Ukrainian and Russian sides, the amount of troops who have died, it's running at about 250 soldiers a day being killed in this conflict. A week or two ago, President Zelensky of Ukraine described the Battle of Donbass as like hell, and the Ukrainian foreign minister described it as one of the largest and most ruthless battles on European soil since World War II. Now, there's always a certain amount of sort of hyperbole when it comes to descriptions like that, but I must say, from the stories we're hearing, that is not a million miles from the truth of what's happening on the ground. Russians are flooding that town with soldiers at the moment.
It's almost unfathomable, you know, when you say 250 lives a day. It's extraordinary to try and get your head around it. But you're talking in your reports about hand-to-hand combat, street fighting. Can you just describe to us what that urban warfare looks like?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we've got used to these sort of artillery duels in Donbass. So, you know, big guns firing at each other. What's changed, I guess, recently, particularly in Severodonetsk, is we're seeing this very intense urban street-by-street fighting. The Russians are using Chechen fighters. They're using mercenaries alongside their regular army. So it is very fierce. A caveat to that, though, it would appear that the Ukrainians are not averse to some sort of strategic retreating at this point as well. So what we're beginning to see is perhaps a slight pullback by Ukrainian forces over to the other side of a river that separates these two strategic towns, Severodonetsk and Lysychansk. That river is becoming pivotal in this. The river Seversky Donetsk has been the undoing of the Russians. They've tried to cross that river on several occasions over the last few weeks, have been unable to do so. And that's what's sort of quite important about this particular town, Severodonetsk, because it's a gateway to crossing that river.
Okay, before I talk to you about the outlook, you have travelled from Dnipro in the centre of Ukraine just a few days ago, and you described the vast difference between what's happening there and in the rest of the country. Then you move into the east and things changed very rapidly.
Yeah, that's the very odd thing about this war. You know, you can be in Kyiv as we were 2 weeks ago. You can be in Dnipro as we were last week. And apart from sort of sandbags and a curfew, day-to-day life is continuing. And it's a difficult thing to sort of get your head around. And I think that's actually, lots of particularly soldiers have spoken to us about a sort of psychological disconnect in Ukraine. People in Kyiv are not feeling the war in the same way as people on these frontline villages is. And I think politically, that's something that Zelensky is quite aware of. Do you know what I mean? That there's been lots of talk recently about, you know, what is an acceptable level of concession? What territory down here can you cede in order to placate the Russians if that's your policy? But people down here, that does not go down well, that kind of language.
So what is the outlook then? I mean, what is expected to happen?
Well, that is the $100 million question, Claire. I mean, there are some mixed messages coming from Zelensky, as in terms of what he would see as an acceptable form of victory. The sort of top end of that, if you like, is Ukraine pushing Russian soldiers out of all Ukrainian land, including the land that they occupied since 2014 in the Donbass. The problem, I suppose, with that is that oftentimes war doesn't end with a definitive victory. Wars historically sometimes end with a messy peace. And I do sometimes wonder where we're headed with this one also.
Okay, and last week you spoke to the governor of Luhansk, didn't you, Porik? And what was he saying to you? How concerned is he about what's happening there?
He is very concerned. I actually bumped into him again this morning and we had a quick chat. His assessment, his line very much is, you know, there is an acceptable level of tactical withdrawal, that these place names shouldn't be held onto for any sort of symbolic reason. The priority should be saving Ukrainian lives, saving soldiers' lives. So I think there is definitely a certain level of resignation here that Luhansk as a district will fall.
And you've been hearing pleas from Ukrainians there who are involved in the depths of this fighting for long-range weapons. But the United States has said they don't want to send long-range weapons that would be capable of being fired into Russia. Isn't that the answer that the Ukrainians have had from Joe Biden's administration?
It is. So just to give you a quick example, yesterday we were with a platoon close to the front line. By the way, we met a former TV chat show host. We met a married couple who were lawyers. Their commander, believe it or not, was actually Russian. But every soldier that you meet at every rank, the plea to the US is send us long-range artillery, send us anti-aircraft missiles. The messages coming out from the White House yesterday will not go down well on those front lines. There's lots of technical nuance here, though, in terms of Joe Biden was careful with his words. He said we won't supply them with missiles that can hit Russia, but there's lots of maneuvering technically within that about what constitutes long-range artillery.
Is there much talk there about how the coverage of the war in Ukraine has slipped somewhat from the news agenda?
Well, nobody's talking about that on the front line, Claire. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's a conversation that's perhaps happening, you know, in media circles or in Dublin or London or maybe even to a certain extent Kyiv, but I you know, that's not a conversation that's happening where I am, of course, because you can literally, you know, hear the shells landing a few miles from where we are.
But part of how this war was being fought by Ukraine was that Zelensky-led PR offensive, if you like, and him speaking to the various governments around the world and the attention that garnered. That was seen to be, wasn't it, a significant weapon for the Ukrainians. And I just wonder if the power of that is seen to be slipping at all.
I mean, it's a very interesting question to ask. I think part of that sort of public relations honeymoon period is over in terms of maybe some coverage in the West. And I think you're right. That was used, you know, Zelensky was very clever at using that in terms of diplomatic leverage. But I do think that now the hard graft of diplomacy is starting to set in as it sort of falls off the limelight. So it's a really crucial, arguably the most important period in this war in terms of the diplomacy as it slightly slips off the sort of public radar.
Mm-hmm. Very difficult situation as well for journalists, we know, and there have been numerous casualties amongst journalists, the latest a French journalist.
That's right. Terribly sad. Actually, the journalist, the Ukrainian journalist that we're working with here on the ground, knew that young man quite well. He was traveling in an evacuation bus into that town we spoke of, Severodonetsk. The evacuation bus, it was the journalist up front with some police officers in the cabin of the bus. A missile or shell went off beside them. Some shrapnel came through the windscreen. It was actually armor-plated windscreen, so that'll give you a sense of how close the hit was to them. And unfortunately, that very young French journalist lost his life. A number of police officers were also injured in that. And that will bring the number of journalists who have died in this conflict to 8. And that's terribly, you know, terribly sad and shouldn't happen. But that is our job, to be in those places, to remain safe, of course, but to be in those places. Mm-hmm. But I think we should always kind of bring it back to the fact that, of course, 1,500 residents of that town and the environments lost their lives during the course of that war. You know, and that's just devastating.
Yeah, and that journalist was 32 years old, Frederick Leclerc Imhoff. Porrick, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. That's Porrick O'Brien, reporter with Channel 4 News in Ukraine.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.